2. Fastball called strike 3. Throws Judge with 95. 0-2 to Volpe. Called strike 3. Throws him with the cutter. Volpe goes down. And so do the Yankees in the top of the 5th. 2-2 again. Swing and a miss. Strike 3. Chris Bassitt walks off the mound to a raucous, well-deserved applause. 6 1/3. 4 hits. 1 run. 1 walk. 5 strikeouts.
He puts thought into every single pitch. And I think when you see him bending down or talking to himself or whatever he's doing, he's got a plan for every pitch. And I think that being able to kind of reset himself, you know, with the clock and with all sorts of stuff, he's really good at that. And I think that's just kind of his process at this point.
All right, Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Good morning, Brent.
And good morning to you, Ben.
I feel like sports are a very unique thing in the world where, like, you get praised for talking to yourself. Like, I do a lot of talking to myself in my private moments, but sometimes my wife overhears it. She's like, what are you saying? It's like, I don't even know. Like, I just do a lot of muttering to myself. And, like, I think I'm on her radar.
Yeah.
Chris Bassitt's on my radar in a good way. It's like, good job, good muttering. Well done.
I think Jordan Romano, we haven't seen him yet this year. He is a massive talking to himself. He's having, like, 7 dialogues with himself going on at any time. I don't know that I talk to myself. I, like, scream aloud at things, but that's not so much like talking to myself.
I am the king of in the shower just, like, saying some things, that are nonsensical.
I know. As you people don't get to hear it, thankfully for them, every day of your, I don't even know what to call it.
Guttural scream?
Yeah, it's not quite right. Primal, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's not, because primal to me means like you're getting ready for something.
Well, that's what it is, isn't it?
I don't know. I feel like you're so laid back still when you do your guttural screams in the break. I get 1 to 2 a day of you, and I'll like do a much more subdued version. But like, wah!
Yeah, pretty much.
But like way louder than that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty loud though.
That was?
Good morning. 6:02.
Okay, I didn't think that was that loud. That's the most perfect distillation of just being with Brent Gunning in life. Yeah. Of me going, I didn't think that was so that loud, and I didn't think this was that early. They go, it's both of those things. Why don't you
loud and early?
Why don't you stop talking and why don't you go to bed? Is what most people would be saying to me at this point in time.
I thought you were telling me.
Oh no. You already got to do that once.
That's true.
Yeah. God, knife fight between us last Friday for who got to go home. Not that we didn't love doing the show with Jesse Rubinoff, but bed.
No, it was mine. It was my earned day off that I just forgotten about.
What'd you do to earn it?
I sent an email 2 weeks previous to that.
Yeah.
And then forgot about it.
Salt mines here for you earning that thing.
Anywho, Blue Jays back over 500. Remember the halcyon days of them being over 500 previously?
No.
It's game one of the season.
Oh, okay.
They were 1-0, and now they are back over 500 and 9-8. It is a log jam for third place in the American League East. Yeah, I'm already looking at the standings.
Standings watch. Standings
but
watch.
Is this sustainable, though? Because the Blue Jays have a -16 run differential. But yeah, they are tied with the Rays and the Red Sox at 9-8, as once again the American League East has all 5 teams above 500.
Of course.
Sure, why not? Anyways. Big win for them over the Yankees, a team in which they, against whom they lost 2 out of 3 in the Bronx. Chris Bassitt now stringing together 2 very, very good starts.
Mm-hmm.
And the offense, boy, looks a whole lot like the one we saw for 162 games in 2023. Mm-hmm. Good job taking the bases loaded walk. Good job being there when the ball was thrown for a wild pitch. And then not so good job not taking the extra run that was handed to you when the Yankees were conceding a run. And Dalton Varsho decided, that's not fair. Like, you shouldn't be able to score on an out. So he decided not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alejandro Kirk with his first extra base hit of the season in his final day as the number 1 catcher on this team. Anyways, the headline item for the Blue Jays in yesterday's victory, obviously Chris Bassitt, who we'll get to his comments to Shai Davidi from yesterday as well. But yeah, this is not a guy that throws 99. He doesn't throw 87 though either. Like he throws 93, 94. He can rush it up there. And against one of the most formidable middle of the lineups in all of Major League Baseball, Juan Soto, who hit him 395 feet to center field.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, he was slicing and dicing and got Aaron Judge a couple of times.
Yeah, you loved what you saw out of Bassett last night. It was just a weird start to the game. I mean, Buck and Dan were all over it on the broadcast that he didn't have the the PitchCom device that allows him to call his own pitches. He didn't have that on. Then he did.
It makes me anxious when it's like, it's like 3 seconds left. And he's like, I don't. And he's just pressing the buttons eventually.
There was one moment when, and this was, I think, the impetus for it. It was in the first inning where he didn't start his windup until there was 1 second left on the pitch clock. And then this will shock you. It was like field goal good through the uprights as he pitched it clean over everybody's head, including the umpires. Yeah. So that did make me anxious as well. I think that it is a little odd that him and Kirk, like, this isn't the first year. It was just a little weird that they were on such a different page so early in a game. But to Bassett's credit, I don't look at it as overcoming that. I look at it as just an awkward start. But he was great. And the fact that you can have a non-power pitcher do that against a power, I don't want to make it a power-laden lineup, but at least some power bats in there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to find a better punch than Soto and Judge. Yep. I mean, maybe in Ohtani and Freeman and Persona
non grata.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you being able to do that against those guys, and yeah, if Soto gets to him there and it's not 395 but 410, we're having a different conversation, but it didn't. And that's the way baseball works. I think that when you have a guy like this in Bassett, it's interesting because when you see a performance like that, you say, he has so much wiggle room. He has so many pitches that he can find a way to do it, even if one or two of them isn't working, and that's true. But he also has a little less wiggle room because of the way he does it, because it's not 97 high in the zone and just blowing stuff by guys. And quite honestly, from an aesthetic standpoint, again, this isn't me saying get 99 out of here. I love watching that. If you've got it, I'll take it. But it's nice to kind of mix in your Bassetts of the world. And even, I mean, they talked about this on the broadcast last night as well. It's not mixing it in with the Blue Jays. This is kind of what the staff's made of. It's like you got Bassett, you got Barrios who does this. And, you know, Gausman he can run it up there, not overpowering. I guess Kikuchi would be like the closest thing to a pure power pitcher they have in the rotation. So just from an aesthetic standpoint, I think it's nice as well to kind of mix up what you see in the sport every day.
I don't know if any of the other starters in this Blue Jays rotation are doing the things that Chris Bassett's doing, by which I mean, I'm reading the Shai Davidi story on Sportsnet.ca. Chris Bassett's talking about, the Yankees got a new hitting coach, so I know their approach was going to be different. And, like, I went through the lineup one time and was talking to Pete Walker, and I understood what their approach was. Like, I understand the strategy. I don't know if there's anybody. Listen, I know Mark Burley was a great pitcher for the Blue Jays and one of the most satisfying players to watch.
Oh, God.
Love Burley. In recent memory. But Mark Burley wasn't doing that. He was like, you tell me what to throw, and I throw the ball where you indicate that I should.
Don't have time to think when you're just getting out there and chucking it.
But Chris Bassett, he's like playing chess out there.
Yep.
You're right. Like, different strokes for different folks. Like, I also enjoy, like, 100 miles an hour on the black. That's cool. It's really hard to do for 100 pitches and really hard to do for 30-plus starts. Yeah. Chris Bassett threw 200 innings, albeit the first time in his entire career. But, he's 35 years old. Again, the regression monster does not scare me at all with this guy, because the velo, I mean, here's the thing. When you do start at like 93, 94, 95, the velo is, I don't think, going to drop off the face of the earth. And when you have that many pitches at your disposal and you're able to carve through a lineup as good as the New York Yankees, I think that plays, and it plays. It played yesterday and has played in the last two starts for him.
Yeah, he was a guy I was worried about. I think Kikuchi was probably my chief candidate there, but he was second kind of among them for me. And I'm happy to have been proven wrong thus far. He had the little blips here and there. And I think it's important to realize with a guy like Bassett that when it is this, when it is 94 and it's more of a plan and precision, there are going to be days where he's just a hair off and he's going to get hit. Like, that is still going to happen.
Sure.
But as long as that is not a consistent feature of his outings, then there's no reason.
Been.
No, exactly. And there's no reason to think it will be. That's where the regression monster comes in, as if he's just a little less fine. It's not, I don't think it's going from 95 or 94 to 91 and 92. I don't think that's where the regression comes in. It's just those days where he's a little less than perfect, and he just has less wiggle room in that regard than most.
Yeah, I feel like there's a, I think people almost forget who Chris Bassett is. This is a guy that's finished top 10 in Cy Young Award voting 3 of the last 4 years.
Yep.
And the year that he didn't finish top 10, he still had an ERA of 3.42. Right? Like he's been remarkably good, remarkably consistent throughout the course of his entire major league career. And since he's decided to be healthy, he's been healthy. And again, we'll get to that in just a second.
Yep.
The offense, they did enough, man. One for 10 with runners in scoring position yesterday. You want to know what they're hitting with runners in scoring position?
Boy, do I.
On the season, Brent?
Yep.
It's a robust 2.14. Which is actually not that dissimilar from their overall batting average. So it's not like, oh, well, that's due to regress up to their overall batting average. I guess it is, but like I think they're hitting 226 overall. So it's like not that much. The bats have not come around yet. Like I said, they scored 2 of the 3 runs on a bases loaded walk and a wild pitch with the bases loaded. They had the bases loaded, none out in the second inning. We're looking for the big hit that never came. They also were handed a run that they decided that they were good with. It was also an inning after Bo Bichette was picked off first base with 2 out and runner on third base and the 5-hitter at the plate. This is a team that's it's not going to be as bad offensively as they've been, I would think, because there's a couple of guys. Like, do I think the bottom of the order has some issues? Do I think it's, like, quite an interesting scenario to have Kevin Biggio as your 5th hitter and, like, not feel too bad about it and thinking, like, ah, you know what? Who else fits the bill? Like, okay, sure. That's all true, but I got to believe that even if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is not 2021 version, he's better than this. And I've seen enough, and I've been fooled once, and it will never happen again, to believe that Bo Bichette at the end of the season will have his stats. So, like, that part will come around. But, it's just eerily similar watching this offense to the one that we saw in 2023.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems and they're all the exact same. If I talk about Bassett being nice because it's at least something different, this is the exact opposite. It's like, this is my nightmare all over again. I pose it a very simple question to you because we're going to talk about approach, and I think there will be some people, like, were the Blue Jays at all patient last night or was Heal just wild?
There was instances of both. I think the patience allowed him to get wild. Like there were some good plate appearances where close pitches were taken for balls, and I'm thinking of the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. walk, and then he also had a strikeout where he's waving at a breaking ball 100 feet off the plate. But yeah, I think you can't have one without the other. It's not like anybody is going to take the 7 walks that they took off of Heal yesterday. But yeah, he was also all over the place.
Because I think that people will say, yes, okay, like if you're somebody who wants to defend a new approach or something like that, and be clear, that's not me. I think you'll look at that and say, well, look at this. You got your 7 walks. This is what you want. You want to force yourself to get better pitches, and then eventually the damage hit will come. I'm less a believer of that. I just look at it as this is the second time in, what, a week that you have had bases loaded against the New York Yankees in the first 3 innings of the game with a chance to blow it wide open. And last week it's Cavan striking out, looking at it. And this week you saw what happened last night. That is the thing that frustrates me, is the lack of a timely hit. And I understand on a 1-game sample size, yes, you can say, okay, it didn't come, but it's not a 1-game sample size. It's not even 162. We've just been doing this with the runners in scoring position thing for way, way, way too long. And it's not just an approach issue. If it's not one of the top 4 guys in the lineup coming up, why should you have any confidence that it's about to happen? And like, Kirk, good job coming through, but he hasn't been that guy to be able to do that for them this year until basically the last 2 games. So that's the way I look at it, is it's just, okay, great, you were able to find a way to get the win because of good pitching last night, but you just have these chances early on in games to blow it wide open, and you haven't been able to take advantage.
I mean, they did in the Rockies series when Dalton Varsho hit a grand slam, but yeah, largely the big hit has not been there. The one guy that's been pretty consistent in that regard is Justin Turner, but yeah, he had a rough go of it with a couple of RBI opportunities yesterday. And that's just natural to happen, considering the hot start that he was at. Yeah, this is a team that's going to win through the strength of its starting staff, its bullpen, which was great again yesterday. Good defense, and like being better on the base paths. Like, when's that? The Fangraphs has this stat. This is an overall, like, a catch-all base running statistic. And last year, Blue Jays were third from the bottom in this statistic. I don't know if it's one that you need a larger sample, but it does match the eye test. Mm. They're currently 25th in base running in all of Major League Baseball.
That feels right.
And again, like, first two innings, they had two of the more egregious base running mistakes that you can have.
Yep.
Bo Bichette, yeah, in an RBI situation, deciding to take to attempt to steal second base, which is fine if you can do it, but you have to be 100% certain you're going to make it second base. And then a guy that's not usually making the base running mistakes, and Dalton Varsho, makes an egregious one in the second inning because he's, I guess, unaware of where the defense is playing. At what point is that on the manager? Like, what can we attribute the lack of base running? So there's like guys on this team that struggle running the bases, right? Mm-hmm. Alejandro Kirk is never going to be a burner out there, but it's also not like this base running statistic is not just about speed.
No, it's about like taking, going first to third, those types of things.
It's being a good base runner. I mean, at what point also do we just accept that this is just a team that's never going to be a capable base running team?
Yeah, I think you might want to prepare yourself. You might want to steel yourself for that realization. Need I remind you about the aneurysm you nearly had after the playoffs ended last year with Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? The Varsho, it's funny that if, depending on who you ask me about making the base running mistakes, I do put that on the coaching staff or I put that on the player. With Dalton Varsho, you cannot be making mistakes like that. You're Dalton Varsho. You are supposed to be the hustle and speed and do everything the right way kind of guy. If you can't do that, then what is it you do here? I know you ran into the Grand Slam over the weekend, but you're not going to live on that forever. So that I put on him. But from a collective, I think you have to look at it in that way. What do we talk about for a coaching staff? I mean, with baseball, it's a lot about, you know, a plan of attack. What's your approach at the plate? What's the pitching? But I think we look at that as a hitting coach and a pitching coach thing. In terms of the overall manager, it's just a being prepared to play. Do we not remember what John Schneider was brought in here to do? It was to be, yes, it was the relationships he had with the core players. Yes, that was important. And yes, there was relationships he had with the guys above him at the front office. That was important too. But it was a little bit more of a stern kick in the butt approach than Charlie Montoyo slapping the bongos. And I don't think that Schneider is saying, don't worry, it's okay, still get orange slices if you make a mistake on the base paths. But at a certain point, you do have to hold somebody accountable for it.
Yeah. Again, like, those are, when I think of the guys that are making the most egregious base running mistakes, it's not necessarily Dalton Varsho in particular. And honestly, that was less egregious than the Bo Bichette one, because I guess if I had to squint and come up with an excuse for the Varsho one, it was that, he thought it would be caught, like, he was freezing on a line drive she thought would be caught. But I mean, if he had evaluated where the Yankees were playing their defense, he would have known right off the bat there's just no chance I was going to get caught, and they were conceding the run, and he was supposed to score it. The Bo one is, I mean, it's the very different circumstances, not game two of a postseason series. He's not at the plate. He's at first base and he's not in scoring position. And he doesn't have a chance to tie the game, which Vlad did. And the aforementioned aneurysm game for me, aneurysm moment. But that's awful. It's awful, awful stuff. And I just, if you're going to be the pitching and defense and playing all these 3-1, 2-1 games, you can't be making mistakes like that. Yeah. Also, I mean, speaking of things that they were mentioning on the broadcast yesterday, and maybe this goes to conversations that are being had about, you know, batting practice as well. Rogers Center in the early days of the second season of the renovation seems to be similar as far as the ball's not traveling as far as they anticipated, right?
Yeah.
I mean, mentioned the Soto smash to center field. There was another one to right field. Forgive me, I forget who hit it for the Yankees, but everybody in the ballpark seemed to think it was gone, or at least off the wall, and it didn't. It didn't go off the wall. It was caught at the warning track. It does feel like Rogers Center is not going to be the bandbox that maybe some thought it would be. I mean, to your point, I think if you are the pitching and defense team, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think the Blue Jays should prefer it that way. Like, I'm sure Vlad and Bo and Justin Turner and George Springer, when they're at the plate, they wish it wasn't that. But I think in the overall, if you're looking at what's the better competitive advantage for the pitching and defense team, it would be the pitching and defense team that plays in the ballpark that doesn't give up a bunch of home runs, which it appears Rogers Center does not.
Yeah, I don't know if that's how they designed it necessarily. Again, when you look at the pillars of this team, it's weird that it's the pitching and defense team, But when you still look at the like long-term pillars of it, I think that still a lot of people look at it as Bo and Vlad. And it's like, get out of that thinking, guys. It's like Jose Barrios is as much a pillar of this team as anybody in this org right now. He's actually locked up beyond the next season and a half here. So I think that it is definitely going to bode well for them. You know, this is a down the road issue. It's, I do wonder if this hurts their ability to attract like free agent bats, which has proven to be a bit of an issue in and of itself. But for this year with this iteration of the Blue Jays, yeah, it plays way better to be in a pitching and defense park if you're the pitching and defense team. It's funny how it changes too, because I'm blanking. Who was here for the first home series? Do you remember?
The Mariners, like, and then the Rockies.
There was a homer. There were homers in like the first two or three games of that Mariner series, and you're going, oh, okay, maybe it's a little different this year. And then as you've seen balls kind of die, you go, oh, okay, maybe we are back to what this
roof
was last
opens.
Year.
It's a different ballpark.
Yeah,
too.
That's true. That's true. And I wonder when that'll be. I mean, we're certainly we're priming towards roof opening season in Toronto. You'd think.
Unfortunately, the one day game they have at home this week is the day that it's going to rain on Wednesday.
So no roof open.
I would think not. I don't know.
I know if it's raining, I can't confirm.
Well, yeah. No, I know for sure tomorrow it won't be open. And they have to do like the testing. Got to do the testing. I don't know if they've done the testing yet. Anyways, I also mentioned Danny Jansen activated yesterday, not in the game.
That's not nothing.
Yeah. Alejandro Kirk making his final start as the unquestioned number one catcher on this team. An interesting time for him to start hitting and coming up with his first extra base hit of the season. Cromulent job done by him in a situation which is, I don't think, ideal for him playing every day. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen that at times. Wear on the body and, like, affect his offense. Although, I mean, the offense hadn't been good from the get-go.
No.
But yeah.
No, it's actually perfect for him. He's like, guys, I don't think I'm going to hit to start this year. So if you could just have to catch me every day so no one will question anything I do when I'm up there, it's perfect, actually.
Yeah. But I think.
How many guys wish they're like, can we just tell people I'm catching every day to start the season?
I think we are going to get to a spot, though, until he gets hurt again, where like Danny Jansen is catching two out of every three games going forward.
Yeah, I think that has to weigh into it as well. I think that Kirk has shown an ability in the past couple of seasons to develop pretty good relationships with one or two guys. I mean, we know it was him and Manoah for a big chunk of that Cy Young S season from Manoah there. But so you're still going to need him back there, obviously. But yeah, you want Jansen catching games for this team. On a team with a lack of thump, you need Jansen's bat in the lineup. And if Kirk can hit, then great. It's a good problem to have, and maybe that means more Justin Turner in the field days. But
and Danny Jansen's going to get hurt again.
Of course he's going to get hurt. I'm just saying in this fleeting moment in time before he plays a game and opens himself to the possibility of getting hurt, that it does give you the option to kind of gum up. Well, not the option that you want to gum up DH, but you just need more competent bats in this lineup. And Jansen, obviously, like we know he's not a great average hitter. He's not, but the power potential is there, and this team just needs it.
Absolutely needs it. Although the home record is good so far. 5-2 at Rogers Center. It's a battle of the lefties today as the Blue Jays trying to take the series. Carlos Rodon against Yusei Kikuchi. So before we wrap up this Blue Jays conversation, the Chris Bassett one-on-one with Shai Davidi really had me thinking yesterday. Let me read you some of the quotes from it.
Regale me.
All right. This is in regard to the pitcher injury debate that was made explicit by Major League Baseball Players Association and Major League Baseball itself in regards to how much Major League Baseball Players Association thinks it's directly related to the pitch clock. It makes me sick to watch the finger pointing on why all this is happening rather than everyone kind of taking the blame for themselves. First and foremost, it is the players to blame for throwing the way that we're trying to throw. But for people to think that it's not the pitch clock, that's completely wrong. It is the pitch clock. Training-wise, how people push training, it is that too. This is a much bigger issue because this is not a one-factor thing. Okay, separate quote, but I think related.
Okay.
If you gave me 2-3 weeks... there's not a doubt in my mind I can hit 97. This is Chris Bassett, by the way. Not a doubt. I don't want to train for that. I want to train to try and throw 200 innings a season. I know when the season comes winding down, our bullpen is better because of me. Our starters are fresher because of the innings I can throw. I think long term over short term.
If I were to there's no silver bullet.
Okay.
In regards to fixing the pitcher injury problem.
Okay.
And I don't know how we get to this point, but here's what I feel comfortable in saying as far as resolving it.
Yes.
Make more Chris Bassetts. Mm. If there were more Chris Bassetts, if everybody was a Chris Bassett, we wouldn't have guys just like factually dropping like flies because of Tommy John injuries.
Yep.
How do we do that, though?
Well, I think, and this is going to sound like a shot, I don't think it would be one, but the part of that quote that jumped out to me is, if you give me 3 weeks, I could get up to 97. There's a difference between 97 and 101 or 102.
Yeah, but I think the point is good. I think he's correct that chasing velocity.
I think he is right to say that. And if you can inject Chris Bassettism into all the 14 like year old thought process of how baseball should be taught and how young pitchers should be built up, then yes, this is a great thing for a generation moving forward. But I think that if you're a guy who is sitting 95, 96 and say, I can chase to get up. It's just, that is still the golden goose. That is still the golden ticket. Yeah.
Until organizations realize the assets and the efforts they put into guys chasing velocity results in just like a myriad of pitching injuries and like a lack of depth within the organization. And then internally, and this is a process and we're in the early days of this, but this is like a free market thing. It's like, yeah, I hate the cost of groceries too. You know what lowers the cost of groceries? People stop buying groceries or somebody else undercutting the other grocery stores.
Proletariat, here we go.
Yeah. That's the way the free market works. So if we hate the pitcher injuries and we hate velocity and we think this other thing should be more valuable, well, it has to become more valuable.
Yeah.
I think if you could just go out and grab a Chris Bassett, I mean, there's a reason why he's made the money that he's made. He's the reason why he was the coveted asset in free agency that he was. I mean, if we go through, this is year two of the pitch clock thing, which is probably exacerbating an issue that was already like, Jeff Passan's book, The Arm, was not written 2 years ago. It was written longer than that ago.
It's called The Arm, not The Clock.
Yeah, these pitcher injuries have been an issue for pitchers longer than the pitch clock has existed. It's just like kind of pushed it more to the forefront. But yeah, if guys keep going down with injuries, if organizations realize, we have just like an entire roster of what we thought were great pitching prospects that are on the shelf for years because they blew out their UCLs, you know what they're going to target more? You know what's going to become more valuable within their organization as far as drafting and developing? Is not guys necessarily, like, you want both, ideally, and there are still, like, the freaks, like the Justin Verlanders, who's also, like, undergone some Tommy John in his career as well, but, like, there are freaks that can do it. But I think what you'll see, and it takes a long time, because it has to start at like the teenage development level, is those guys becoming more valuable. And not that you target the guys that don't throw up or 90, but you're looking for durability more than you are high-end level starting pitching.
There's only one path to that then. And it is it's a World Series team that is built on a starting rotation of Chris Bassett's. It's copycat league. Like the reason we have the chase for velo now, like obviously, people have been wanting to throw hard forever, but this idea of elite bullpen art, like I think back to, and again, like they're not the team that started this, but I think back to like the now Guardians and like the Andrew Miller teams of just like you want these elite weapon bullpens of guys that just throw hard, hard, hard all the time. And if that is still what is winning in November, it's not going to matter that Chris Bassett is right or that the game will be better in 20 years if we have more Chris Bassetts until it's a bunch of Chris Bassetts that are closing out games in the World Series, I really don't think you're going to see that C-level change. And it's sad because I agree with them. Mm-hmm. If I could just by edict make Chris Bassett the pitching czar for the world and everyone had to do what he said, I'm with you. Let's go. But until, and again, I don't like, it shouldn't be on Chris Bassett becoming a World Series MVP to make this happen. But until you have somebody like that who is so dominant, not just for 200 innings, but when it matters at the absolute most, at the pinnacle of the sport. Because guess what? You love Chris Bassett at everything he does. But if it's a leverage moment and you got, I don't know, like Munoz poking around or Duran with the Twins, whoever, pick your guy, you're still wanting that. And I think until that changes, which I don't see it happening anytime soon, that's still going to be the valued thing.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And
thank you.
It seems that
it's painful for you.
It seems that if you're doing it in short bursts, like 20 pitches instead of starting pitcher, you're less likely to destroy your arm. But yeah, can we have both? And I just think that the
all starters have to throw below 97. Well, all relievers can get above it.
No, I mean even to have like a one starter that throws upper 90s. But yeah, that you have like a stable that you're also trying to develop guys that that give you depth that you feel more comfortable about taking the ball every fifth day and giving you 200 innings. Anyways, all right. When we come back, it was our pleasure to talk to Vern Lundquist yesterday.
Boy, was it!
All right, we'll bring you the man who has called 40 Masters tournaments and is now retired next. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ames, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Show Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Scotty Scheffler picking up his second career green jacket at Augusta National over the weekend. And for the final time, we heard the dulcet tones of Vern Lundquist, who's kind enough to join us on the line right now. Thanks for doing this, Vern. Just signed off your final Masters broadcast after 40 years at Augusta. You said you didn't want to bring too much emotion to the broadcast, but when it was over, did it start to overwhelm you?
Well, it hit me about 5 minutes before the sign off. I was sitting in the tower at 16 and knowing it was coming to an end, and Jim Nance, my dear colleague and good friend, decided to say goodbye in a very, very wonderful way. And that hit me. I didn't shed a tear, but the tears were welling up right behind the eyeballs. It was a memorable, but it was also a very emotional week. And in all candor, I'm kind of glad that I got through it, and it's in my rearview mirror.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that. Not obviously at the stature that you're going through, but I mean, we've all had a big week where some of the pressure's going to be on you, or there's going to be eyeballs on you, and you are obviously, you know, you enjoy calling the Masters. I'm going to assume that, and you love every second of it. But there is an element where you just can kind of exhale and breathe. I mean, Vern, you've seen that place evolve over the kind of second half of its life, being Augusta National. Just what does that place still mean to you? And if you could just talk about how it has changed and evolved over the years, but it's also a time capsule going back to 86 as well.
Well, my first year was actually 83. Sevy won it. That was the last one that ever had to finish on a Monday. So I was there in 83 through 96. And uninterrupted. And then we had a management change at CBS, and I had taken an opportunity to go to Turner Sports and do their NBA game of the week and their Sunday Night Football NFL game of the week. But I was still, in my mind, employed by CBS, because coming out of the 94 Nancy Tanya Lillehammer debacle, we were counter-programming the NFL on CBS with figure skating shows, and Scott Hamilton and I were hosting those. But the new management didn't see it that way. So I sat out 97, Tiger's first win, and 98, which was Mark Amara's first win. And then came back in 98 when we got the NFL back, but I also got to return to Augusta. So I had a two-year hiccup. But it all adds up to 40, and it all added up to a very, very memorable week.
Yeah, and I mean, you are synonymous with that 16th hole. How did that come to be? How did you end up in the 16th tower?
Well, as a matter of fact, When I came back in 98, 99, I missed 97, 98. I came back in 99, and initially I was assigned to the 14th hole that first year. And then Sean McDonough, who's a wonderful broadcaster, had decided to leave. He was at 16, and he decided to leave and go to ESPN. So the 16th opened up. So my first year at 16 was 2000. So I just completed 25 years sitting behind that 16th green.
Yeah, it is incredible. I mean, obviously that green specifically, one of the spot of your greatest highlights. I won't make you pick between Yes Sir and the Tiger chip there, but is there another moment that stands up? I mean, I don't know that anything could equal those two moments, and I wouldn't make you pick between them, but is there another call of yours from the Masters over the years that stands out alongside the Tiger chip and the Yes Sir?
So indelibly impactful to my professional career. And thank you for not making me choose, because I really can't.
They're like
I
your mean, children.
I say one. Uh-huh. It's 1 and 1A, but that's on Monday. Tomorrow, maybe 1A first and then 1. And you know, I've listen, there are worse things in your life than to have your professional career impacted by guys named Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. I've been so blessed, and then to get to know them both and really call them friends. It's a wonderful feeling. Matter of fact, I saw Jack and Barbara on Tuesday, got to say goodbye to them, and then yesterday made it a special point. I wanted to get out to 16 and say thank you to Tiger. And he was having a horrible day, and he really had a very bad tournament. You know, made the cut for the 24th consecutive time, an extraordinary achievement. But then I think his knee and his back started to bother him. But despite the fact that he was way, way back in the field, when he came off 16, I was standing down near the pathway that they use to go from 16 green to 17 tee. And we had a chance to shake hands and say goodbye. And I will treasure that moment forever, forever.
Well, Vern, I imagine by now you've seen the picture of Tiger shaking your hand, where you're behind a tree and it looks like Tiger is shaking the hand of a tree. Have you seen that yet?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that one. I've seen a shot from behind the two of us looking back toward the green. You're the second person now in the last hour who has said the tree blocked the view. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I had no idea. But that's it's hilarious, really, because and you know, the video that I have seen was taken. I wasn't CBS. I don't know who, but I've seen that clip. Well, we're shaking hands. And I got to tell you, the other thing that was so heartwarming to me, he went up. Now, this is a guy who's as pride, as full of pride as any. Well, here's 1A and 1,
right.
1 and 1A again. I mean, who has more pride than Jack or Tiger? Either one. And but when he teed off on 17, I was still standing there. And as he was walking by, he turned and gave me a thumbs up, and I thought, "Oh my gosh, this is too good." I'm sitting here in a hotel room in New York City, talking to you guys, and it still gives me chills to think about that whole encounter.
That's amazing, Vern. And you know, I don't mean to take this away from you, but that's something I feel like I've seen a bit of a shift in Tiger the last couple of years. You know, I'm not going to pretend to know him at all, but it does seem like he's allowed himself to appreciate some of these more milestone moments. You know, it feels like even 5 years ago, I'm not saying he wouldn't have shaken your hand, Vern, but I don't know that he would have had the appreciation for the moment. It seems like he's allowed that part of, I don't know, his life, or allowed more into that kind of kind of part of his life. Have you noticed that as well, the shift there? And I don't know, maybe it's a thing that comes with age or mortality, but that's something I feel like I've seen of Tiger late. And honestly, that picture and going over to shake hands with you feels like kind of a perfect distillation of it.
You could not be more on the mark. You know, he 5 years ago, he wouldn't allow himself to make eye contact with anybody. And now he's softened. And I think it's age and appreciation for the stage of life in which he finds himself. But you're absolutely right. And I don't know that he would have come over and shaken. You know, we've got this tie. He was so gracious at his press conference on Tuesday. He said, you know, we're going to be tied to this at the hip forever. And I understand, and I'm full of appreciation for that. But there's a graciousness about him now that I don't think was there 5-6 years ago. Not at all.
Well, and no one will ever be Tiger. No one will ever have the peak that he had. But it's hard not to watch what Scottie Scheffler's done in the last couple of years, and winning his second Masters, and then, you know, finishing your Masters career with a birdie on 16 as well, and think, boy, what could be? Does the mind race? And I mean, we the way he's playing right now, Vern, it's maybe we are looking at somebody that can win the calendar slam.
I'm in that canoe with you. And the other thing, my wife and I were talking on the flight coming up here from Augusta. We were chatting about Scottie. He's 27. He's got 2 Masters wins. You think he doesn't envision the possibility of going, surpassing Jack with 6? I bet it's entered his mind. He'll never, never, ever, nor should he. He'll never boast about it. He'll never admit to having that desire. But I'll bet you that it's crossed his mind. 27 years of age, Jack won his 6th when he was 46. So that gives Scottie 19 years. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it is to me within the realm of possibility.
Hey, before we let you go, Vern, looking ahead to next year's Masters, early April, will it be hard to watch initially? And maybe you can spill the beans. You know who's going to be calling 16?
I do not. That's interesting, because you guys have been reading my mind. we're in New York. We're in New York for my boss's retirement. Sean McManus also retired after 27 years of terrific leadership of CBS Sports. And so his retirement party is Wednesday night. That's why we flew up here today. And I want to ask him if he's got a thought about who might sit there. His successor is a terrific man named David Burson. And it's David who will make the choice, along with Seller Shy, our producer. But I want to reach out to both of them, and they're not going to give me, you know, I can suggest, but they're going to take my suggestion into consideration among a variety of things. I really don't know who it will wind up being. I can only hope that whoever it becomes, they will have 25 years themselves to sit in that spot.
Well, those are some big shoes to fill, no question, whoever it is, Vern. Thanks for, 25 years at 16, 40 years of the Masters. It was a pleasure to listen to you, and it was an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. Thanks so much, Vern.
Thank you, guys. Let me give a quick shout-out to a dear, dear, dear partner of mine in skating. She's a resident of Toronto, Tracy Wilson-Kinsella. And I chatted with her 2 weeks ago. She and Brian Boitano just completed an educational trip teaching to Shanghai, Beijing. So if there's a chance she's listening, I just want to know I'm thinking about her. And thank you guys for the chat. I enjoyed it very much.
There is the great Vern Lundquist signing off after 40 years at Augusta National. What a gig, man.
Yeah, it's incredible. Sit at the best perch at the course, arguably, at the most pristine of golf courses in the world. Sit there on Sunday with the funnel pin where you're guaranteed to get some moments.
Oh, yeah.
And then you make the moments even better. You have arguably the two most iconic calls of all time at that golf tournament.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, and I think there's a broadcasting lesson to be learned from Vern, right? Like, the two iconic moments are Jack. Yes, sir.
Yes.
And
yes,
Tiger.
Sir.
And Tiger. In your life.
Yeah.
Right? It's just a guy, an economy of words.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't describe every little detail that was happening, but was a human being and just reacted as any of us would. I mean, honestly, you got to have the voice of like a Vern, which,
Well, and less is more too. Just thought, God, on that Tiger call, it's like the job he did narrating Tiger stalking around the green. But it wasn't him going, and Tiger paces two steps to the left and walks over to the right. It was just, God, he's so good. These guys are the best.
Yeah. And I can speak from experience. You said best perch on the golf course. That's somebody that's been to that golf course.
Oh, you've been in the tower?
Not in the tower.
Okay.
But so, I've been in that, like, near that location. Yeah. I've been in the grandstands at 15.
I know. I took a picture of you.
Yes.
I alerted you to it, and then you were like, I'm going to go to the right authorities to get, like, a better picture that's not a picture.
You were
the
one that alerted me?
I mean, I guess you would have been alerted by millions by the time you got to your phone.
It was you.
Because I was working. I was, like, cutting probably like clips from Leafs practice or something that day. And then I was just like, I recognize this face. And more importantly,
I was wearing a Jay's hat.
Bulbous head and that Jay's hat.
Yeah.
And I just was like, I bet that's Ennis. So yeah, it was me.
And it was me in the grandstands
at
15 green, which was, as if anybody is planning on going to the Masters. By the way.
I do, by the way. Just one day. It's going
to
happen.
Every once in a while, I tell my story of going to the Masters, like, oh, wait, how does that work? Like, the Masters tickets and the lottery, like, you have to pay? I was like, no, it's free, and you just need an email address, and everybody should do it, and I don't know why don't.
Stop telling people about it also.
For me, I don't care because I've already won twice, and, like, people go lifetimes without winning, and I won two consecutive years. But yeah, if you ever get the chance to go, and I will go again when my kids are grown, and if they're into golf, like I'll have to suck it up and pay the whatever insane amount.
I was sitting there on the weekend with my 3-year-old, and I'm just like, he's like lost in the sauce. He's like, oh, this, I hope it goes in. And I'm like, if you're into this, one day your daddy will take you there. And he's like, I want to watch my show now. So I don't know. Maybe we're safe on that.
It's an exorbitant price, especially if you go for like a tournament round. But to go for Wednesday or one of the practice rounds, just to get onto the grounds.
Completely agree.
And if you go, especially for a tournament round, the grandstands at 15 is great because you get to see the approach, obviously, and the decision making that can take place, whether it's going for it in two or the layup. And if it's the layup, you get to see, which is not an easy shot, downhill.
It's a harder shot.
Yeah, downhill with the water in front. And, of course, the water, the 16 water, comes into play if you hit it too far. And then putt out. And then you get to see the tee shots in 16. Yep. It's an ideal spot. And I mean, I don't know how they're going to pick the next guy to be in the tower at 16.
God.
But Vern was the one guy associated with the one hole. Obviously, Jim Nance is like the voice of the Masters, but outside of Nance, it was like Vern at 16.
Yep.
So
yeah.
If whoever's doing that next is going to be, that's going to be a headline item for me.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's weird, right? Because the broadcaster never wants to be the story, but it does have to be somebody with some gravitas, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think this can be I think I'm gonna get it right. This can't be like a Joe Davis situation where it's like, hey, we got our 32-year-old kid, he's a bright young star, we're gonna put him in this spot. It's like, I don't know that I want that. I think I'd like it to be Ian Baker Finch or somebody like that. I don't know.
Yeah, Faldo doesn't do it anymore, but like, I don't know. And I don't know, that's the wrong type of guy.
Because you don't want like Smiley Kaufman in the tower on 16.
That's the thing. Vern, we just talked about this in the break, that like Vern, he's a broadcaster. He's not a golf analyst. He's not. I was actually going to ask him, like, hey, have you ever played 16? I don't even know if he golfs. Yeah. Like, he might not. But
that'd be hard.
It's not a hole that necessarily you need a tactical breakdown.
Right.
We know the deal.
Yeah.
You need somebody to capture the moment, like Vern did. So somebody with a great voice and somebody who's just, I don't know, human being knows how to react.
You're putting your hat in the ring.
Yeah, I could probably do it.
Don't do a Vern impression. You have to be you.
Yeah.
I think I would get too excited, though.
That's why there's no way on earth.
Because, like, you have to be excited, but not, like, you can't be screaming. And I'd be like, screaming.
I could not do 16 at the Masters. I could do 16 at the Waste Management.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that is more my vibe. I feel like I could fit in there like, gosh! Oh, my goodness!
Oh, my God.
Gee willikers!
Yeah.
But, yeah, that at 16, I don't think the people want that.
Yeah.
They did want Good Vern, gig. And we were very, very happy to oblige.
Yes. Thank you to Vern Lundquist. All right, when we come back, Leafs with their penultimate game of the regular season tonight.
Good job.
Against the Florida Panthers, and they are banged up. We have some roster information and how it impacts Austin Matthews in these final two games as he chases 70. That and more next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.